Good morning. Please be seated. First matter on this morning's calendar is State v. Parker. Before we get started, I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. Late yesterday afternoon, we got a motion from the state to supplement appendices to the PRP response. And the appendices are basically the application for a warrant and the warrant for one of the two cell phones that are at issue in the PRP. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that. First question is, counsel, would you identify yourself, please, for the record?
Certainly. For the record, my name is John Hayes. I appear on behalf of Appellant Anthony Parker. And before my time starts, I'd like to address what the court just mentioned.
Okay. The second question that I have is whether you have any objection to that motion.
I cannot make an objection, nor can I agree to it. I do not represent Mr. Parker in his personal restraint petition.
Okay.
I'm more than happy to argue Hinton to this court as it applies to his arguments, but I would neither accept nor concede that motion.
I recognize the difficulty. We're faced with the difficulty to have an issue, and to the extent that you wish to comment on it, we would welcome that, and obviously you're not binding anybody. So the next question I have is whether you want to reserve any of your 10 minutes for rebuttal.
2 minutes.
Very well. Thank you very much.
As I mentioned, I represent Mr. Anthony Parker. He appeals his convictions out of Kitsap County for human trafficking, promoting prostitution, assault 2x4, burglary 1, kidnapping 1, and unlawful possession of a firearm, assault 4, and tampering 1. I almost put in a partridge and a pear tree, but he had a large number of the charges, all arising out of a series of incidents involving another person. In the ninth day of the trial in this case, defense counsel identified three witnesses to the prosecution that he was endorsing. The prosecution complained that they hadn't had an opportunity to meet these witnesses. He said, well, I've got one of them or more will be at your office at noon, and I'll be there with them. On the morning of the 10th day of trial, the defense attorney moves to withdraw. This was his second motion to withdraw. However, in this motion, what he says is, the defendant identified three witnesses for me. I sent my investigator out, interviewed those witnesses. He sent me reports. I endorsed those witnesses. We subpoenaed those witnesses. And what I believe now is that my client has suborned perjury in each one of those three witnesses. Not only suborned perjury, but that I am part of that subornation, that not only am I a witness and my investigator a witness to those crimes, but that I will be called, my investigator will potentially be called, whether now or in the future, and that my email will be subject to a search warrant. Not only that, but depending upon how the prosecution wanted to look at it, they could make a claim that I was a party to subornation to perjury. On that basis, I moved to withdraw. The court denied the motion. It had been a very long trial. As I said, they were in the ninth day. Our case law informs us that an attorney has a conflict of interest if, in fact, they have an let me read the two of them. Counsel actively represented conflicting interest and the actual conflict of interest adversely affected counsel's performance. Now, adversely affected does not mean prejudice in the sense of an ineffective assistance claim. What it means is, and I will quote from the Reagan case, likely affected particular aspects of counsel's advocacy on behalf of the defendant. We could not have a more classic example in which this attorney had a conflict. His interest, number one, over his clients was his own.
The standard is actual conflict, correct?
Actual conflict, okay. Yes. He had an actual conflict in which he believed that he was going to not only be a witness, but potentially a subject to prosecution. And that did adversely affect his representation of the defendant. As a matter of fact, he did not call three witnesses that the defendant had identified for him. He believed the first witness's claims that the defendant had suborned perjury, and he did not believe his client. His client later bitterly complained that these witnesses had not been called. This is an actual conflict of interest. It caused prejudice in this particular case. The trial court erred when it denied this motion to allow this attorney to withdraw and deny the defendant a fair trial, and he is entitled to a new trial. I'm going to move to the Hinton issue.
Before you do that, counsel,
certainly,
in terms of the failure to call the witnesses, is part of our analysis having to determine the materiality of their testimony, and how do we do that here? I mean, what would they have testified to help his defense?
They were going to testify that the state's chief witness, the complaining witness, had been lying, that the defendant never had abused her, he had never forced her to do anything, they were intimately familiar with these two, and that a number of the incidents that she claimed had occurred had not occurred, and she had also claimed a number of things. I was held a prisoner. They would have testified that it was not true at all. He had tried to get her off of drugs. He had not tried to get her on drugs. So these were material witnesses, certainly. They went directly to the credibility of the state's main witness in a case in which credibility was critical. So on to the Hinton issue. In this particular case, the police seized two cell phones from the woman that later became the complaining witness. She wasn't the complaining witness at the time they seized those two cell phones. They seized both of them without a warrant. The first one, they were going to arrest her. They thought, in the police vernacular, that they were going to be able to flip her.
Let's back up here.
Yeah.
When you say the seizure was without a warrant, what you're talking about is the initial contact between the detective and her in the car, I think, in one instance.
That was the first cell phone.
Okay.
With the second cell phone, the police went into the house on a warrant, which allowed them to arrest her and look for a gun. It did not allow them to seize a cell phone. And that cell phone was not something that was obviously have evidentiary value. They suspected that it would, and they exceeded the warrant. And so it was a warrantless seizure also. The Hinton case tells us, and I would refine it down to this statement of law, a defendant retains a privacy interest in his or her text messages that appear or are recorded on a third party's phone. And the only way to break that privacy legally is to get a warrant or to get that third party to reveal it, because the defendant takes that risk when you send that message off. The same with a letter. I was anticipating a question.
Well, you answered my question.
Okay, very good.
With regard to the first cell phone of hers that was taken, was it a voluntarily turned over, or was it a search incident to arrest? How did they get it?
They testified, and this is the difficulty that I have in representing him on his PRP.
Right.
I don't have the facts. I do have them as they were presented at trial, and that's not always the way they're presented in a suppression motion, but I would infer from the facts, the police officer says she was not arrested.
Right.
I was going to. We were detaining her, and we decided not to arrest her.
But we don't know if it was a pat-down or if she just said, here it is, or anything like that.
We don't.
Yeah.
What we do know is that the officer certainly didn't claim that she volunteered that phone for them to take it with them.
Wasn't there some testimony by the detective at trial saying it was not a consensual situation, or am I looking at...
No, that certainly was the testimony. They stopped the car, a stop that I believe was illegal, which would start the whole argument to begin with, because they believed that she was involved in prostitution activities at that time. They supposed it. And then they searched, they found drugs, and they found the cell phone, and then they talked to her, and she said, I am willing to work with you. And they said, we're not going to arrest you. We are taking the cell phone and the drugs. We don't know. The police could claim that she said, take my cell phone. We don't know. That's why the PRP would need a reference hearing, so we can determine what these facts are in this particular case. But certainly he set out sufficient to get to a fact-finding hearing, because if he is correct, a great deal of the state's most damning evidence would have been suppressed in this case. Not only their text messages, but links to Backspace.com, which is, I've come to understand it through this case, is the, I suppose, the Craigslist of prostitution activities. It was material in this case.
So I just want to make sure of your position. Because you don't officially represent Mr. Parker on the PRP, what's your position on the state's motion?
My position on the state's motion is that since I'm not biting Mr. Parker, that it's there's really no objection that can be made to it. Ultimately, I'm asking, saying that he should have a reference hearing. Certainly, they'd be able to bring in this evidence. But the problem is the warrant doesn't help him. The stop was illegal. The seizures of the phones were illegal. And so the fact that we subsequently get a warrant does not ameliorate that illegal seizure of the phone. That's quite clear in our law.
Thank you. You have your 2 minutes.
May it please the court. I am Randall Sutton for the state in this matter. I work for Kitsap County.
I've got a question, a procedural question that follows up some of the discussion we've had. Counsel represents Mr. Parker on the direct appeal, but not on the PRP. You brought a motion that has to do with the PRP. Have you served that motion on Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Pro se on that?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't have that much to say about the witness tampering or the conflict based on the witness tampering issue. I think it's fairly well laid out in the brief. I would point out that at the time of the hearing, even defense counsel himself characterized it as a remote chance that he would be a witness. The prosecutor indicated that the people they had spoken to had never even met defense counsel. There was no indication that he was in any way involved or any way a suspect. And based on that, the trial court, and that he was definitely not going to be called as a witness, the trial court denied the motion to withdraw, again, on the 10th day of trial. And I think that it's the Fualau case, which basically says unless counsel is actually called as a witness, there is no actual conflict.
Well, let's work through that. If the court had allowed him to withdraw, the court would have had to have declared a mistrial.
Yes.
And how would that affect the ability to retry, Mr. Parker?
I don't know that it would affect.
So they could have retried. Wouldn't
I mean, I don't think it wouldn't have been a mistrial that would have been on a result of any misconduct on the part of the state, and therefore I don't think it would have been a double jeopardy issue, if that's what you're asking me. As far as the Hinton thing, because I don't believe it is a Hinton issue, I would first like to apologize to the court for overlooking that case law, because I believe Mr. Parker actually even cited it in his PRP. But it was a difficult time in our office, and I just missed it, and I apologize. That said, I think I have to correct a couple of factual statements, and I understand counsel is not representing Mr. Parker on the PRP, so he probably is not that familiar with the issue. But Mr. Parker has never challenged the seizure of Ms. Holliday's phone. He has only challenged in his brief the seizure of his phone, and that seizure is described, among other places, in the warrant for the search of Mr. Parker's phone.
Well, my reading of the PRP is that he's challenging both. He's challenging the seizure of his phone, and that's not an issue that was before us right now. What we want to talk about is the effect of Hinton on of J.H.'s cell phones.
Correct. My point being, however, is that I want to focus what the issue that has been raised is. He has never challenged the seizure of Holliday's phones. He's challenged the search of Holliday's phones.
Okay.
So Mr. Hayes was arguing about whether or not this was a proper stop or a proper search, and that has never been raised and it's never been briefed.
It was a lawful seizure of J.H.'s phones under Hinton, he would still have a privacy interest in his text messages.
And I would concede that. That said, my motion has attached to it not one but two applications and search warrants.
Well, let's get to the heart of the matter. Let's assume that you can show that there was a warrant properly issued for the search of the phones once they were in the police department. Does that solve the Hinton problem?
Yes, I think so.
Why?
Because prior to going into any of these phones, they specifically went in and applied for warrants to search the phones, including text messages and photographs. And we have to understand, too, that this case didn't start with the initial arrest of Joanna Holliday. They were investigating Ms. Holliday and Mr. Parker. Mr. Parker was known to them before all of that happened. This was the entrance into where they began to arrest him. He had been under investigation for some time. It wasn't just that they pulled Ms. Holliday over. They looked at her phone and said, oh, here's Mr. Parker, let's grab him. They were gathering evidence against Mr. Parker at that time. And before they searched her phone, there's two phones, one on the 4th, one on the 12th. Both cases, they applied for and obtained affidavit or warrants to search those phones. They cited the fact that she was working, was believed to be working with Mr. Parker, that there were back page ads featuring her, some of which had links to his telephone number, which they had previously subpoenaed records from or got warrants for records from the phone company and determined that that phone number belonged to Mr. Parker. Then the warrant was issued for the search of the first phone on the 4th. Subsequent to that, when she didn't meet with them, they arranged a sting and arrested her in the hotel.
Well, I understand what you record now reflects, but my question remains, warrant is issued for the search of her phone. I suspect no one was thinking about the implications that he may have had a privacy interest in the text messages because Hinton wasn't out, at least the Supreme Court's Hinton wasn't out. How does just the submission of these warrants, even if they're correct, solve the Hinton problem? In other words, they went in, they got his text messages to her. Under the facts of Hinton, that was a problem. Why is the problem cured here just because you have a warrant?
Well, because they've got the authority of law, which is what is required. And like that's where I was going with this, is okay. That the applications, if I'm not mistaken, I've read like three warrants now, but the applications specifically discussed her activities with Mr. Parker. That was the whole purpose of getting the warrant, was to get the information and to get the texting and to use against him.
Well, remind me about the facts of Hinton. Weren't the phones lawfully taken in Hinton as well? I thought the issue was...
There was no warrant to search the contents in Hinton.
So you think that's the distinguishing...
That, I think that's...
Once there's a warrant, it's
Hinton
lawful.
Requires. I'm not sure what else... If the phone is lawfully seized and then you get a warrant to search the contents of the phone, I'm not sure what more... the state is supposed to do, or what more protection there should be offered to someone. Article 1, Section 7 protects against unlawful searches, and authority of law is provided by a warrant. And in this case, for each of these phones, as both the original appendix to my PRP response and the supplemental appendices that I'm proposing, all show that there was a warrant obtained prior to the search inside each of these phones, and the warrants were specifically directed to the contents of the phone, not the phone itself. The only issue Mr. Parker raised in his PRP about the seizure of his phone was that the warrant that, and again here I believe Mr. Hayes misspoke, the warrant was not to arrest Ms. Holliday, it was to arrest Mr. Parker and to search his home for the gun that had been described. He was at, and the police information was at the time he was arrested, the phone was in his hand, and there were known associates that they were also investigating whose names were flashing up on the screen, and that was why they seized the phone and then obtained the warrant to search the contents of it.
So they got a warrant, a separate warrant, a third warrant to search his phone?
Yes, yes.
And is that in the record?
That's my Appendix A to my response to the PRP.
Okay.
So unless the court has any other questions, I would ask that the convictions be affirmed and the PRP be denied.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to go back to the conflict of interest issue.
The time is short. Do you have any response to the PRP part, recognizing, of course, you're not representing Mr. Parker on that?
I think it's quite clear that we need a reference hearing in this case.
He says that the warrant itself constitutes the authority of law that takes care of the problem. Do you agree?
If the affidavit establishes probable cause to seize third party's items that happen to be on that phone, otherwise Hinton would forbid it.
But why is it a third party's item? It's her item. It's just that he has a privacy right in it. That's what Hinton talks about. Because Hinton started out as a standing question that morphed into a finding that Mr. Hinton wasn't seeking standing to assert the other person's interest. He had his own interest, so he had standing to assert his own interest.
Absolutely.
But it was an interest in someone else's property.
Yes.
Yeah. So if there's a warrant to search the property, does it matter it doesn't matter who has the interest?
No, I would disagree. If I have a warrant to search your home for your financial papers and I come across the financial papers of one of your children that is clearly marked just the financial papers of your children, that warrant does not authorize the search of that information, even though it's in your
home. No, but if you come across my financial papers that mention my children,
well, certainly,
then it's within the warrant.
But your children have no privacy interest in that. They have a privacy interest.
Now, Supreme Court said they did. That's what we have to make this the same as Hinton. We can do hypotheticals, but we can't. They got to conform to what we're trying to compare them to.
I understand.
Okay. So okay.
Thank you, counsel. The next matter.